Good morning, Star Wars nerds, and welcome to Throwback Thursday. Here on the Star Wars Nerds Anchor channel, every Thursday we're going to look at any sort of media and material that came prior to the Disney acquisition of Lucasfilm back in 2014. So a lot of stuff we're going to look at are going to be Clone Wars characters, character arcs, story arcs, some of the older movies, including the prequels, and also the original trilogy. Look at characters in there and different situations. So it's going to be our opportunity to take a look back and kind of have a little bit of a history lesson, so to say. So this first Thursday, what we're going to do is we're actually going to go back all the way back to 2008, in which we were introduced to the Clone Wars cartoon series, first as a animated feature-length film, which was a change for Lucasfilm and for the Star Wars saga. And then also we're going to look at some of the one of the first arcs, actually the very first arc in the first season of the Clone Wars. We're also going to talk about some of my favorite clone characters from the Clone Wars series as a whole, particularly Domino Squad, and specifically Fives and Echo, who we kind of followed all the way through the series as characters that weren't part of the main roster, but were characters that we got to know through that series. So today, like I said, we're going to take a look back and we're gonna look at some things from the Clone Wars. Hope you enjoy. Nerd 11, signing out. Alright, fellow Star Wars nerds, we're going to take a look at the Star Wars The Clone Wars feature-length animated film that was released in 2008. The great thing about this film is that what brought to the world of Star Wars was the director and the vision and the storytelling of Dave Filoni, which, in my opinion, he is he's the heir to the Star Wars storytelling legacy. He is kind of George Lucas's Padawan, who has now gone on to become the new Jedi Knight and running things there at Lucasfilm. Now, obviously, Kathleen Kennedy is the one who's head of Lucasfilm and kind of took over that portion as executive producer, of the Star Wars properties and anything else Lucasfilm. But Dave Filoni is really like the director protege and the storytelling protege of George Lucas. So he personally took him under his wing, not only for this film, but also for the television series that they later produced. The movie itself ran about 98 minutes, and it was the first time that we ever saw a Star Wars animated movie. Now, there had been animated specials before on TV, such as the Droids cartoon series. There was an Ewoks cartoon series, and then there was also a cartoon that was part of the holiday special. All three of those we will discuss later on Throwback Thursdays, even though they are now classified as non-canon. They were something from my childhood, and I kind of would like to talk about those. So, but anyways, going back to this is the first time we're actually going to get to see an event that happened during the Clone Wars. Course, in episode 2, we got to see how the Clone Wars started and where the Clone Army came from and how it got its name, but we never actually saw any battles of the Clone Wars until episode 3, and even then, we only saw a handful of them. The battle on Kashyyyk, the battle over Coruscant, and then obviously when Order 66 was executed, all the Jedi being wiped out. But this actually gave us a chance to get to know not only the Jedi of that era, but also the clone troopers they worked next to. We got to meet Cody for the first time in episode 3, but here we get to see how Cody's relationship grew with Obi-Wan, how Rex's relationship, who is brand new to the series, it was Anakin's version of Cody. So it also introduced us to a brand new character, one that ends up becoming very divisive within the Star Wars fan community, but has now become a beloved character, Ahsoka Tano. We got to see her being introduced as Anakin's Padawan, something we never considered or even thought of, that Anakin would actually be training somebody. And it was interesting to be introduced to that right away in this very first film. Now, a little bit of background on it. The film itself is not the starting point for the Clone Wars television series. It is the first kind of episode, but as far as in the chronology, there are two other episodes that come before the events that happen in the film. Now, I would have liked to have seen the episode that goes right before the film to have been part of the film, because it would have added about another hour to the movie. They could have changed a couple of things around. I can understand why they didn't do that, and I'll explain that later on when we go over a synopsis of the film. So this is just my quick introduction into my feelings and everything with the Clone Wars animated feature-length film. So Star Wars The Clone Wars, the feature-length film, opens up with a voiceover, as opposed to having an actual opening crawl, which is a way for them to set this apart from the movies. So instead of being having to read what is going on and the events that have happened before, we're actually being told them. And I kind of enjoyed the voiceover work that was done. It gave you the sense like you were watching an old World War II era newsreel, as if you're being dumped right into the events of happening, that this is actually happening right now. The Clone Wars are happening right now. So I liked that. It gave a little bit of convoluted explanation to set things up, stating that Count Dooku, who we knew about from episode 2 as being leader of the Separatists, has left the Senate, has taken his Separatist armies away from Geonosis after the battle there to start the Clone Wars, and they've kind of taken over hyperspace routes, but that there is one that is potentially open and available, but that one is controlled by none other than the vile gangster Jabba the Hutt, who we all know from episode 6, The Return of the Jedi. So in this story, basically what happens is that Jabba's son, Rado the Hutt, gets kidnapped. You eventually learn that the person who kidnaps the Huttlet is actually Count Dooku's Sith assassin, Asajj Ventress. This is the first time that anyone outside of seeing the Tartovsky Clone Wars cartoon series, which is classified as non-canon, and any of the readers of the earlier books, got an introduction to Asajj Ventress. She's not really a Sith. She's a fallen Jedi, just like Count Dooku, but she's being used by Count Dooku as his assassin. He can't really have an apprentice, even though she secretly is, and that gets dealt with later on in the series, of the cartoon series, which explains why she's not around come episode 3. So anyways, The first thing that we run into, the first event that we run into, is a battle on a planet called Christophsis. This is where we're introduced to Ahsoka Tano, who Anakin thinks is going to be Obi-Wan's new Padawan, but she informs Anakin, no, I'm really your Padawan. They get sent on the mission to go rescue Jabba the Hutt's son in order for the Republic to be able to use the space routes that the Hutts control. And in the process, they end up hijacking a old spice freighter called the Twilight, which becomes their vessel for a while. That also ties into what Luke said back in episode 4, that his dad was a navigator on a old spice freighter. So it's a nice little callback and tie into that and trying to bring some pieces together. So you learn that the whole plot of Jabba's son being kidnapped is all orchestrated by Count Dooku. He has staged this kidnapping himself in an attempt to blacklist the Jedi when it comes to being in favor with the Hutts. So what his plan is for the Jedi to actually retrieve Jabba's son, but then to have his assassin, Asajj Ventress, to either retrieve the Hutlet herself or to kill the Hutlet and blame the Jedi for not being able to protect Jabba's son. This would then make the Hutts not want to work with the Jedi and would cut off their, you know, the supply route that the Republic is trying to get. So as far as the action goes from there, Anakin and Ahsoka are able to, with the help of Rex and the 501st, they're able to rescue the Hutlet from jungle planet of Teth. You get to see some cool action of actually seeing one of the assault walkers ascend the side of a cliff using a grappling hook system, which I thought was pretty cool in and of itself. Not something that I ever thought of a weapon in Star Wars doing, but it makes perfect sense. Why wouldn't they be able to do that? So while Anakin and Ahsoka are on this mission to take the Hutlet back to Tatooine, which would be interesting because this is now the first time that Anakin would be going back to Tatooine that we know of since the end of episode 2. But while he's doing that, Senator Padme Amidala learns about the mission. She's worried about Anakin, and she decides that she's gonna go and contact Jabba's uncle, Zero the Hutt, new character, who lives on Coruscant. She's gonna help out by going and trying to get his cooperation and helping with the situation. But Zero ends up not cooperating and eventually reveals that he is conspiring with Count Dooku to engineer the downfall of Jabba and try and take over the power of the entire Hutt clan himself. So she is, Padme gets detained, but by chance, a call from C-3PO comes in and allows her to summon some help, in which some of the Coruscant Guard, which are clone troopers that are assigned specifically to Coruscant, come in, rescue Senator Amidala, and place Zero the Hutt underneath arrest, which will come in play later on in the series. So once they get to Tatooine, Anakin and Ahsoka are attacked by some Magna Guards, similar to what Anakin and Obi-Wan dealt with at the beginning of episode 3. Anakin is confronted by Count Dooku, and they have a duel, so that adds more into what is said in episode 3 about Anakin being more powerful than the last time they met. But really, it's a ruse. Anakin doesn't have the hutlet. Ahsoka does, and she's able to go with R2-D2 to Jabba's palace, and when Anakin and Ahsoka both get into Jabba's palace, he actually threatens to execute them because he thinks that they still had something to do with the kidnapping of his son. But luckily, Padme is able to call in and convince Jabba that the Republic had nothing to do with it, because Zero fesses up and lets Jabba know that Count Dooku was behind this once and for all. Overall, I enjoyed the movie. I think about the biggest problem I had with it was the fact that I paid full ticket price for what later would become like a double episode, potentially a triple episode of The Clone Wars. They could have done a couple of things a little bit differently. In my opinion, the two episodes that come before this, the feature-length film, the events in the film, the first one is the 16th episode of season 1 called Hidden Enemy, and the one that's very first in the chronology, it's the 16th episode of season 2 called Cat and Mouse. And I can understand, I guess, why they didn't include these two episodes with the movie, although it would have brought the running time closer to 2.5 hours, which at the time, I guess you could say, is a little bit long for a feature-length animated film, especially with all the production that goes into it and the cost of making this type of animated film. But having those episodes tied in, you would have been able to give the audience a bigger chunk and a clean start for the animated series. One of the big problems people had with the Clone Wars animated series that got solved when they started with Rebels is that each episode wasn't in chronological order. Now, I could understand that the reason why they did that was to give more of a feel of a newsreel. Like I said, that it was from old World War II. But it really would have been nice to have those two episodes of Cat and Mouse and Hidden Enemy to be there as a jumping off point before you got into this battle on Christophis. You could see them actually breaking the blockade, because they had just explained that all these trade routes were being blocked by the Separatists. Well, how did they get to Christophis then? And it would also have introduced that intrigue that you get in the season 1 16th episode of The Hidden Enemy, of the fact that there is a traitor in the midst already. There is dissension in the ranks of the clone troopers, that there has to be something going on. If there's already one within the ranks of the clone, of the Grand Army of the Republic, who wants to side with the Separatists, this would have been excellent. And you get to see the first time that Anakin and Obi-Wan have a fight with Asajj Ventress. It would explain a little bit more of that dynamic that you see later on in the movie. And it also would have given us the great voice talent of George Takei right away in the movie, instead of you getting it later on in season 2. But anyways, overall though, it was a good movie. I had a decent time going to the film. Did I run back and immediately buy a second ticket? No. Did I immediately put the put the movie on my to buy list or recommend to people to go see it in the theater? No, because I knew that it was going to be coming out most likely to Cartoon Network as, once again, either divided up episodes or as a special one night of we're going to show it later on when the seasons are going. So by my standards, really I can give Clone Wars, the animated film, a 3 out of 5 for my criteria. Overall, though, I enjoyed the story. It made the hour and a half seem like only an hour, unfortunately, and fortunately, depending on how you want to look at it. But I liked the characters that got introduced and the flow of the story. We actually don't get to see anything about Echo or Fives or a mention of Domino Squad until the beginning of season 3 of the Clone Wars. You actually open up the first two episodes is a prequel, I guess you could say, to the first episode of Domino Squad of Rookies, and then a sequel to it called ARC Troopers. Now, the nice thing is you get to see with Clone Cadets, the prequel, you actually get to see how the clones are trained, what they have to go through in order to essentially graduate and become real clone troopers that get sent out into the field as opposed to being cadets. Domino Squad, you learn, is not the best squad out there as far as their training class goes. They kind of, they're kind of fumbling all over each other. They never want to seem to work together, and they have all these problems. And you kind of learn that if a clone trooper doesn't work out, they get labeled as a bad batch, and could very well end up either being sent off to go and do maintenance duty somewhere else, or just let go altogether. So they don't really get into exactly what happens to them, because you see that you see a clone named 99 who just happens to be slightly malformed and disfigured and can't really perform his duties, is part of the maintenance crew there on Kamino. And he actually befriends one of the members of Domino Squad, Heavy. The nice thing is that the neat thing about this episode is also you learn how the clones kind of get their nicknames for things. For example, Echo got his name because he is constantly echoing the orders back to the rest of the Domino Squad. They could all hear the order come through over their comm system, and Echo would turn around and repeat it. Cut Up got his name because he was constantly joking. Heavy got his name actually from 99s because he always walked around like he had a heavy burden on him. Droid Bait, he got his nickname because he always seems to be getting hit by the droids during their simulations. Fives, unfortunately, his nickname was easily to come upon. His designation is CT5555. When your number designation is nothing but fives, you're going to fall into a name like Fives. So you get to learn these troops, and actually at one point, Heavy is going to go AWOL. He's going to walk off until 99 runs into him and sits there and tells him, you need to teach your brothers to work as a team. That's your problem, is that you guys are all working as individuals. You need to come together as not only team members, but as brothers. You're not just squad mates. You are brothers. You share the same face. You share the same DNA. You may have slightly different personalities, but you're all brothers. And from there, Domino Squad ends up taking on their final initiation and their final task, and they pass it with flying colors in such a way that that one of the ARC trooper commanders, Colt, is there to supervise them and tells them, you're ready to be shipped out to the front lines. Of course, we learn that they don't end up going to the front lines. They end up going to the listening post out on out by Rishi the Moon. But you know what? They graduated. They didn't get relegated to maintenance duty, and they were able to pass on. Okay, Star Wars nerds, since my explanation about Star Wars The Clone Wars, the animated series, the animated feature-length film, kind of took on a life of its own, I actually am not going to talk this week about the very first full arc that we got in The Clone Wars called The Rise of Malevolence, or the Malevolence Arc, as some people have come to call it. But I do want to talk about a group of clones that weren't part of the main roster that you saw every episode in and out, whether it be Cody or Rex, they weren't Jedi, obviously, because they're clone troopers, but it's a group that we actually get introduced to in a very short one episode, and the majority of the clones that are in this squad get killed off in this very first episode that we see them in. And that squadron that I'm talking about is Domino Squad. The nice thing about Domino Squad is that they're kind of the lovable misfits of the clone army, especially when you meet them in Rookies. This is their first assignment. They're sitting out on the back end of space, out near the out on the planet of the Rishi Moon, and they're just on a listening post, and their job is to just sit there and listen. And take it from me, being ex-military, there are times in which you get those assignments in which you just want to sleep the entire time, but you can't. You have a duty to do, especially on a listening post. You may be out on the far reaches, as far away from the enemy as possible, but who knows, you may be the key to stopping the enemy by picking something up at your listening post, at your LPOP, which is the case in this episode about the rookies of Domino Squad. But here we get introduced to Heavy, Echo, Fives, Droid Bait, and Cut Up. And from there, you kind of, just by hearing their names and their initial reaction before their sergeant came in, or you run into the deck officer, you get the feeling that these guys have been together for a long time, and that they're finally reunited with Fives, who was not with them initially, but once he got there, they reminded him, hey, you came in and you've run into probably the worst assignment, the most boring there possibly could be. But as they go on, they are actually single-handedly take out a group of droid commandos. They save Rex and Cody, and in their actions, they save their home planet of Kamino from being destroyed or falling into the hands of the Separatists. Unfortunately, like I said, not all of Domino Squad got out from this first adventure. It was simply Echo and Fives, but they weren't really the heroes. The heroes of this episode was Heavy, whose actions of self-sacrifice caused the rest of the Republic to realize there is something wrong out near Rishi, and that they need to respond with fleet action. And with that, I think I'm going to stop with talking about the clone troopers of Domino Squad. Those are really the only two episodes that they're in, with rookies and clone cadets, because as we said in the events of the episode of Rookies, everyone but Echo and Fives are killed in trying to warn the Republic about the Separatist invasion, potential Separatist invasion of Kamino. So I'll save talking about Fives and Echo another week, either next week or in another future Throwback Thursday episode. Who are your favorite clones from the Clone Wars, or what are your favorite arcs? Give us a call in, or you can always send a tweet in to @_SWNerds on Twitter, or if you would like to send a longer form, because 120 characters, or 240 as they're supposedly going to be expanding to, if you're going to believe what Pablo Hidalgo keeps saying, if you want to write a little bit longer form, you can send feedback in to the email address for my Astromech, R5N6. So you can send that to R6@gmail.com. Once again, that's R5N6@gmail.com. If you're wondering who R5N6 is, that's my astromech that you see as the symbol for my station. He's the one listening to the headset. So once again, if you have any feedback, please call into the station, send a tweet, send an email, however you want to. And if you like the station, make sure that you favorite it and share it with your friends and let them know that they can get in on the conversation as well. We're all here to share the love of Star Wars and to nerd out about it. So once again, this is Nerd11 signing out. That's all for today, fellow Star Wars nerds. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the station, don't forget to hit the favorite button so you don't miss the next broadcast. Feel free to leave a comment on any of the segments or call into the station so the rest of the galaxy can hear your voice. You can also follow the station on Twitter @_SWNerds. At me and leave a comment or question which I might read on a future segment. Once again, thank you for listening. This is Nerd11, signing out and making the jump for home. May the Force be with you.